We are very lucky to be joined on the line by Mickey Huff, the current director of Project Censored, founded in 1976, and president of the Media Freedom Foundation. And he has been a part of Project Censored for quite a while. Thank you so much for joining us today on KBOO, Mickey Huff.
It's always a delight to be on with KBOO in Portland, Oregon. So thanks so much for having us again. Thanks for everything that you do at the station.
Of course. And we're looking back over the last 2 years in this Hindsight 2020 special. And you have put out a book looking back over the top censored stories and media analysis of the last 2 years, Censored 2020. And I really like the fact that you put this as the analogy of going through the looking glass, as if we're in a kind of upside down reality. And I wonder if you could talk a little about that analogy, being in Wonderland through the looking glass.
Yeah, absolutely. Andy Lee Roth and I, our associate director, we look for themes and key ideas that kind of unite a lot of the stories and a lot of the other chapters and media analysis in the book every year. And you know, the last couple years with all the brouhaha about fake news and fighting fake news, and even now tech companies and corporate media pretending that they're going to fight fake news by actually reestablishing their own top-down dominance and censorship by obscuring and marginalizing alternative independent sources. So this year in particular, Censored 2020, naturally we're riffing on the 2020 vision, but we're also riffing on it through the looking glass, and down the rabbit hole we go. Sort of this Wonderland logic that up is down and black is white, and we witness this literally daily through the corporate media. I mean, anybody that tuned in and watched the last Democratic primary debate, you know, it's as if, again, we're in Wonderland somewhere where alleged professional journalists for CNN, you know, completely stir up rumor mongering. And this is after a long history of not covering the most progressive candidates at all. And when they do, they consistently tend to bash them in the name of objectivity. And this is, again, a big ruse in corporate media, the idea of false balancing, false equivalency, et cetera. And that's one of the major themes of the book this year, Through the Looking Glass, is the more and more we take a look at these stories and we take a look at what's happening, the corporate media tend to show a really distorted and even inverted kind of picture of reality. It's sort of an unreal reality. And so Andy Roth and I riffed on Lewis Carroll, of course, at numerous points throughout the introduction, relating it to, you know, anything from Julian Assange and the treatment of independent journalists, to another chapter in the book, Curiouser and Curiouser, that looks at the problem of junk food news and news abuse that goes on in our media. So yeah, you'll see a few threads throughout Censored 2020 through the looking glass, where we're using that kind of theoretical framework or literary framework to kind of bring us up to speed. And we have great artwork from Anson Stevens Bolin in Santa Fe, who did our cover the last 2 years. And if your listeners go online to projectcensored.org, they can see a version of the cover there. That sort of has Trump Shire Cat and the Burning Queen of Heart above the White House with the dollar sign. And we see a migrant child trying to sort of peer through this mirror of the looking glass that's actually been mounted on a border wall. And we see the Ace of Hearts armed at the border and so forth. So a lot of conceptual riffing going on here about the issue of information integrity and about the pernicious and pervasive problems of censorship and propaganda in our society.
And when you talk about censored news, a lot of what you're talking about is kind of self-censorship by journalists that choose to cover certain things and not others. People looking at the United States think that we have a free and democratic media. And I look at your very first story, which is about the FISA rules targeting journalists, and question whether that free and democratic media is actually the case. So can you talk about that story, censored story number one, FISA rules
right.
targeting journalists?
Yeah, and I mean, this goes back to the Obama administration. So again, it's interesting that here we are in the, one might hope, final year of the print of the Trump presidency. But this is an ongoing issue. Media censorship is an ongoing problem in various guises. As technology has changed, as the media industry has changed, and that's part of the problem that it is a for-profit industry, we've had new growing and different kinds of troubles and problems, but they all kind of relate around there are certain narratives that are not considered acceptable. There are certain kinds of narratives that people may pursue as investigative reporters that people in government or in corporate America would rather not, in fact, be reported at all. Or if they are reported, they're reported in a very specific way. So this story, the Justice Department's secret FISA rules targeting journalists, FISA is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. This is supposedly monitoring communications of journalists and news organizations. Several First Amendment organizations and scholars caught wind of this. The Knight First Amendment Institute, Columbia University, the Freedom of Press Foundation. So there are people in our organizations in our society that are attuned to the kind of challenges that we're facing here. But this goes back to some Eric Holder memos that shows how government can use court orders under FISA to monitor journalists and monitor news organizations. And this is a series of stories that was published, republished at Common Dreams, but originally came literally from Press Freedom, the Freedom of the Press Foundation. Another one came from Knight at Columbia. Another was The Intercept. That would be Glenn Greenwald, Jeremy Scahill. This was a story written by Cora Courier. And, of course, another by Jessica Corbett over at Mint Press News. And these, by the way, I'll get into this in a little while of how we select the stories and how we research them for listeners would like to know or be reminded. But notice that there's a series of stories written about this and about how this is going to send a sort of a chilling effect. It's a shot across the bow of journalists, right, saying like, well, if you find out that you're being surveilled or find out that we're paying attention, perhaps you'll think twice about anything you say or ask or do. And so these independent outlets covered these stories, right? And we also, when we look at these stories, we don't just look at the students and investigate these. Students and professors look at these stories, they vet these stories. So we teach critical media literacy as part of our pedagogy. And we work with hundreds of students and a couple dozen professors over 20 campuses around the United States. And that's how we sort of dragnet all these stories. And we collect hundreds of them during the course of every year that our judges review. And again, we can revisit that later if you'd like. But it's important to note that we also then have students analyze, well, where were these stories covered? And did the corporate media pay any attention to these kinds of stories? And what we find out is that corporate media reported very little about any of these stories when the Freedom of the Press Foundation and others found these memos. There is, of course, some stories triggered by the Mueller report. But again, you know, what we see here is very little or scattered coverage in corporate media of these very serious First Amendment stories, and that's why we then have to go to independent organizations, independent journalistic outlets, where they don't worry about things like the propaganda model. They're not looking at advertisers and how they influence the news. They're not relying on the same usual suspects of elite sources, and they follow the facts, and they follow transparently sourced information. And that's what we think that journalists should be doing. And so we hold up every year in our top 25 stories, we hold up what we think are exemplars of the free press, the independent and vibrant free press, as a role model to the rest of the corporate media. There are certainly times when the New York Times and the Washington Post and other major news outlets break very significant and very important stories. So they are very capable of doing investigative journalism when they want to. Or when their paymasters permit them to. But many times it's these kinds of other important, significant, and important stories that we see in the margins that corporate media outlets will not pick up. And when they do pick them up, they may pick them up in distorted fashion, or they will try to spin the information to the advantage of their owners, their advertisers, and establishment political figures. So again, your listeners are invited to go to projectcensored.org. The top censored stories are posted for free on our website, and you can also see the lists all the way back to 1976. And also, the validated independent news project assignment that students use to generate these kinds of stories and find them and analyze them, we publish all of the vetted stories that we look through every year. And so ProjectCensored.org itself is kind of an interesting treasure trove of independent news sources and analysis and important underreported stories, even among those that don't make our top list. And so we find it to be a pretty solid resource overall for academics, for students, for people that are really interested in getting out and finding out about the news that didn't make the news.
Well, and when you talk about the junk food news that people are being fed and the fact that many people now are looking through social media to get their news, I think looking at some of your stories about social media are pretty significant in this current era. Number two on your list is how think tank partnerships establish Facebook as a tool of U.S. foreign policy. And number 10, where the Pentagon aims to surveil social media.
Oh, yeah. These, unfortunately, are becoming far more recurring and far more commonplace. Rob Williams and others at whom we work with have published on our site an updated version of Chomsky and Herman's propaganda model 30 years later that looks at the problems of bots and algorithms and social media issues and Google search engine spikes and deplatforming and a whole raft of new ways to censor, shape, and winnow information. The think tank partnerships at Facebook, this is another one of those examples of how, you know, under the guise of fighting fake news, what we're seeing more is a Trojan horse for silencing alternative news and reestablishing corporate news dominance. That's actually an entire chapter in Censored 2020 in Chapter 8 that Emil Marmel wrote for us, and we actually covered that on the Project Censored show. That we do weekly that helps outline these. But this story is significant because it's been developing for some time. It specifically, in this case, highlights Facebook's sudden interest in fact-checking and calling out fake news after the 2016 election when Congress hauled the big tech execs in front of them to sort of do a finger wag and say, how did this happen? And they all were blaming fake news for the outcome of the election. Which is a factor, but certainly didn't necessarily cause the Trump presidency. But nevertheless, Facebook has some really curious characters that they work with to do fact-checking. One of them was the late Weekly Standard, which was a neoconservative publication going back to the 9/11 years. The other is Atlantic Council, and that's a Washington, D.C. think tank that's actually funded in part by the State Department, the Navy, the Army, major multinationals, including Chevron and ExxonMobil. Atlantic Council is also basically a public relations arm of NATO. And so hardly an objective resource, you know, definitely a paid ideological filter to sort of go through and help tell, Facebook what they think are actual news stories, what they think are real or fake news stories. And surprise, surprise, they're basically a propaganda arm of NATO. You know, Alan McLeod has done several great reports on this for Mint Press News, as well as Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. Again, we've covered this, and I interviewed Alan on the Project Censored show. So your listeners can go and find a lot of this stuff online, and at projectcensored.org, they can go and click on the top stories, click on Story 2, and they can see Adam Johnson writing for FAIR. They can see Jake Johnson over at Common Dreams. They can see Alan McLeod for FAIR and Mint Press. So, I mean, there's a lot of sources here that I suspect that a lot of listeners at KBOO are probably more familiar with. But a big part of the critical media literacy education of Project Censored is turning people on to the vast array of sources that exist online in the 21st century that aren't the usual suspects and that aren't the corporate press. Because knowing where to find different kinds of alternative and independent information is really part of the challenge. And that's, of course, too, why community radio like KBOO is a really significant, it's a really significant resource for any community. And I think Portland is definitely lucky to have a station like KBOO.
Well, thanks. You know, when you talk about the partnerships of U.S. government propaganda organizations with Facebook, I found it really interesting that in August of 2018, when organizing was going on to fight the massive Unite the Right, so-called Unite the Right protests that were being mm-hmm. planned, that yeah. The protests against Unite the Right were somehow identified by Facebook as fake news, and they put that out as one of their big findings, and it had a big press conference about it, and identified that the protesters challenging Unite the Right were somehow fake.
Yeah, like, and we see that going back to Charlottesville, right? Right, and the idea that this is astroturfed, somehow George Soros is funding all of this fake protest and so on. And look, as far as the history of social justice movements in the United States go, that's just simply not the general tendency. Grassroots movements can certainly be co-opted, but where we see a lot of these AstroTurf organizations isn't on the left, it's actually on the right. Whether it's AstroTurfed for the Tea Party, there was no Tea Party. You know, Anthony DiMaggio, a political scientist, wrote a whole book on this issue and media propaganda around this. And I'm afraid that this is a kind of another iteration of it, is not just sort of, in this case, it's inverse. It's not the purposeful erection of a fake group. It's actually denying that a real group exists by claiming it's being funded or blown up or exaggerated in the media. That's simply not true. But that is certainly the treatment that Black Lives Matter and Dreamers and other activists have received. Certainly people on the front lines of climate change, definitely on the border, where we've seen more and more censorship, journalists being stopped and detained at the border. Again, it's always a way of attacking anybody that's trying to tell those stories or have those voices that are marginalized be heard, but it's somehow not real. And this is, again, why this whole notion of a post-truth war world, we challenge greatly. We may be in the midst of an epistemological crisis, But the discussion of post-truth world is just balderdash. The concept itself is rubbish, and it's just ripe to allow confirmation bias and motivated reasoning to flourish, to overtake reason, and to render facts pretty much just useless. And that's a crisis. And so what we're doing at Project Censored, and what Nolan Higdon and I do in our latest book, United States of Distraction, on media manipulation in post-truth America, of course, and what we can do about it by City Lights, is we outline the many things that can be done to buttress factual and transparent news sources. And a big component of that happens within our educational system and teaching people how to interact with news organizations responsibly and how to develop a sense of news literacy. So at Project Censored, when we're highlighting a lot of these underreported stories, we're also simultaneously trying to teach people how to be better critical thinkers and more independent in their thinking of assessment of news stories.
Absolutely. And I know we have limited time, and the mention that you made of the climate change movement, I think, is something that is really important, something we've covered continuously here at KBOO. And your story, number 14 on the most censored list, is the FBI surveilled peaceful climate change protesters, and that was the BP oil refinery. And I wonder if you could talk about that and the connections to Standing Rock, something else that we covered here significantly at KBOO.
Oh, absolutely. And the overlap is very, very, very serious and significant and very real. This is right out of a COINTELPRO playbook, the FBI surveilling peaceful protesters, infiltrating protesters, acting as provocateurs, threatening people with detention and long arrest records, filing bogus, trumped-up felony charges on people that would throw them in prison for decades. I mean, this is, again, another silencing effect. This is another way to try to punish people for exercising their rights, their First Amendment rights, both to redress grievances, but also to have a free press and free expression where we can tell others that these things are actually happening. And so, you know, much like in a previous book, we highlighted how the FBI, this is again very recent, how the FBI was actually targeting people in Black Lives Matter as what they called, quote, black identity extremists. And that's an actual term that the FBI was using to basically label people as terrorists who were civil rights activists. You know, the FBI goes all the way back where they tried to do this in the 20s with Marcus Garvey. They surely did this with Martin King. You know, we're coming up on Martin Luther King's birthday. Martin Luther was just recently, and then, of course, coming up is Martin King Day. This is kind of the MO of these organizations, and it's really important that the news media accurately and factually report about the tactics that the government employs against their own citizens. And it's also important to remember that it's not just the FBI. It's a lot of other contracted groups, corporations, etc., that find many different ways to discourage people from exercising civil rights and human rights. And we think that it's very important that the so-called free press points these out, because these are very real, very ongoing, very historically contextualized challenges to our freedoms in the 21st century. And the only way, Yanka, that we'll be able to really address them is if more people understand the significance of them and that they are actually very real.
And speaking of threats that are very real, we talk about climate change activists. The climate change itself, one of the most underreported stories by the corporate media, as they tend to focus on junk food news and ignore the fact that COP25 was even happening and that these massive protests are happening all over the world. Your number four story and top censored is that U.S. oil and gas industry is set to unleash 120 billion tons of new carbon emissions by 2050. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, this is an example. You know, this is kind of, while these corporations and these fossil fuel companies are busy greenwashing their actions and behaviors, fortunately, there are people writing at Common Dreams, people writing at Oil Change International about that the U.S. oil and gas industry is still polluting massively the environment. And so, again, I encourage people to go online, projectcensored.org, where you can access all of these stories, and you can access the links to the original pieces of journalism themselves, because we are all about platforming, not deplatforming. We're all about citation and acknowledgement and giving credit where credit is due. And we want more people to be more aware of these kinds of resources, because they're telling people what's really going on. You know, while Exxon and BP and these other companies spend, you know, millions and millions of dollars on public relations and advertising, they're actually spending far more time, money, and effort increasing their profits in what's remaining with fossil fuels. And so it's kind of a bait and switch. Just so your listeners don't think that we only write about bad things that are happening, we also write about good news and stories that are censored that are very positive. And number 20 is scientists have been able to accelerate coral reef regrowth with electricity. And this was sort of an accidental find and discovery, but it's one that portends to be quite significant and important moving forward, given the state of coral reefs around the world. And in fact, the very last chapter of Project Censored's book this year is an entire expose and analysis of the significance and importance and why we need more of something called constructive media. And there's a chapter called Our Collective Crisis in Constructive Journalism, Growing the Good Impossible. And we just had Ken Burroughs and Amber Yang, the authors on our Project Censored show recently. It's a very significant chapter that outlines the future of journalism that can't just spin in a negative cycle and can't just look at binary problem solution reporting, but literally has to creatively look for new ways to be in the world in the 21st century, as the world is rapidly changing right before our eyes. And so, again, we don't just leave people with a sense of despair in the project. We actually leave people with concrete things they can do, a whole slew of sources that they may not have been familiar with, and we invite people to be more involved in the process. And so if there's anybody out there that's an educator or a student and you're interested in getting free materials from us about our curriculum, our pedagogy, you can contact us through projectcensored.org, and we would certainly love to hear from any of you.
Thanks so much. Yeah, and I love this critical journalism and the idea of what is the difference between critical and constructive journalism, you know, focusing on problems versus focusing on solutions. Here at KBOO, we often talk about constructing interviews in a way that you start with a critique, then move through analysis to a vision and a strategy. So you're not just identifying the problem, but actually moving towards what are people doing about it and how can our listeners get involved. So is that what you're meaning when you talk about constructive journalism and engagement journalism?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But I'm also even talking maybe a bit more about that in a paradigmatically shifting way that, of course, it's important to know. And, of course, there's a great graphic that goes along with that particular chapter in the book that kind of looks at looks sort of at a tripod, right? It kind of is a threefold sort of news crisis and how constructive journalism can help. And there's this image, right? We have critical journalism, which is problem-focused. We have solutions journalism, which is innovation-focused. But we also have engagement journalism, which is more focused on the greater good. It's about awakenings. It's about building connections and community. So it's a little bit more specific, I think, than what you just described. However, I think that it is very much in line with the kind of structure that you just described that you all tried to do at KBOO. And of course, that's also because KBOO is literally community radio and journalism is a community practice. And so, you know, we need to move further and further away from the top-down managed type news where only the experts tell us what we're supposed to believe and think. And we really need to go back to trusting ourselves, trusting our sources, trusting our communities and the people that live in them that are able to tell their own stories. You know, we don't need to wait for the corporate news media to get around to talking about how bad the homeless situation is in certain parts of our country, because many of those journalists, those lucky enough to have these corporate jobs, they're middle class, upper middle class. Some of them are actually downright wealthy. So they're not attuned to these kinds of issues. They don't live them. Right. And so that's the kind of reporting that we really need. And the Project Censored show airs out of KPFA in Berkeley, and we're on about 40 stations. That's the kind of journalism that we try to do as well. And again, we certainly have nothing but accolades to give to KBOO and the whole KBOO family there for the important work you do for your community in Northern Oregon.
Well, thanks so much. And again, we're going to keep doing this work together as a community media network with groups like Project Censored. Mickey Huff is with Project Censored, been telling us about the top censored stories of 2018, 2019, as we move into 2020. Thank you, Mickey, for joining us today on KBOO.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. And I'll be back in touch with KBOO because I'll be there March 26th speaking at Powell's about Project Censored and the United States of Distraction book with Nolan Higdon. So I certainly hope to be back on before I get up to Portland.
That's great. So we'll look forward to seeing you in Portland March 26th. And if people are interested in looking at these and any of the other stories on the Project Censored list of the most censored stories the last 2 years, you can go to projectcensored.org. We'll also have a link to that on the KBOO website, kboo.fm. This is Jenka Soderberg reporting for this special program, Hindsight 2020.